He repeated his journey, as you know, and on that canoe trip. When I was trying to write that part of his story, and I realized I couldn't do justice to that story. And I told my dean about that, and he said, you know, there's one thing. I said, I have to involve myself in some way. I'd got to have a deeper meaning for me. And I said, that's what I tell my teachers. You know, you can go out there and you can tell your students something and they'll forget it. And you can teach them and they might remember it. But if you involve them, they'll learn. And I said, I have to practice what I preach. You know? And he said, well, you know, there's one thing that hasn't changed in all these years. He said, that's the river. And so that gave me the idea that I should repeat his canoe trip. And I kind of figured about where he went in with the captives and how they went down that river, ended up at Fort Ridgely. It took us two 10-hour days to get there, and we traveled at night. I mean, not in the daytime, when everything was visible. He traveled at night with women and children, and I can't imagine how difficult that must have been to keep four canoes going, and we couldn't even manage one. We tipped over twice. And I think that was, during that trip, is when I started to really draw close to what who Lorenzo really was. You know, when you read books and you read stories, they usually tell you what happened, what a person is. You know, writers of books are always strong on four of the five W's. They always talk about the who, what, when, and where. But they leave out the most important one, and that's the why. Why did this happen? Why did he do that? He didn't have to do that. You know, he could have took his family and went up in the North Woods and waited it out. Why did he decide? Well, two things. One is that he obeyed his mother. And the other thing, and that's commendable in itself, because I wasn't very obedient to my mother in my days. And the other thing is he saw the children and the women. He saw the innocence, the hopelessness of innocence. And that touched him. And I could identify with that part of it because I'd been in two countries that were war-torn. One of them was Germany. And I could see the look on a little kid's face when German civilians would come up and they'd kind of hide behind their parents and look at us with fear, bewilderment. They didn't know what to think of us. You know, were we going to be friendly, bad, or what? They had the memory of all that happening, all those bombs and everything had to be in their minds. And knowing that we were probably the ones that did that, and what were they supposed to think about us, you know? And that fear I could see in their eyes, and that bewilderment, you know? And the other place I saw that was in Korea. And as hard-hearted as I got in those years, that used to get through to me, and I'd walk away. And I couldn't look at those kids. It didn't seem to bother the other guys as much. I guess you develop a sort of state of mind where you don't let those things, you don't think about them. You don't want to look at those things. You don't want to look behind that, you know. And so you kind of turn a blind eye or a seeing blind eye to things like that. You don't let it get to you. That's the best way.